This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
From Africa, we'll be hearing from Eritrea, Niger, Burkina Faso, Republic of Congo, Burundi, Mozambique. So there are actually a lot of Africans speaking today.
That was VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir on what to expect on the last day of the UN General Assembly today. Details coming up. Also, a fight over a Chinese electric vehicle battery factory reflects controversy over Chinese investments in the U.S. And the U.S. Africa Command Chief talks about Somalia in an exclusive VOA interview. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. At the 79th session of the United Nations General Assembly, African leaders have been clear they want a seat at the global table, especially considering the continent's ascendance. Our UN correspondent, Margaret Bashir, talked to me about what to expect on the last day of the assembly.
So today's sort of a mop-up day, I would say, at the UNGA. It's the last day of speeches. We're down to some of the foreign ministers who are left here and some of the ambassadors. And from Africa, we'll be hearing from Eritrea, Niger, Burkina Faso, Republic of Congo, Burundi, Mozambique. So there are actually a lot of Africans speaking today. There's also, we just heard from the Syrian foreign minister, and a little bit later, we're going to hear from the DPRK, North Korea's ambassador. So these are always sort of the last day speeches and from countries that put less of an emphasis, shall we say, on the United Nations.
And Margaret, African leaders have been very clear they want a seat at the global table, especially considering the continent's ascendance.
Yeah, we heard a lot this week from various African heads of state about the need for Security Council reform and expansion and the idea of a permanent seat, at least one permanent seat for Africa at the table. And I think that idea has a lot of traction right now. It's something, frankly, that's been discussed in the halls at the UN for decades, and it hasn't gone anywhere. So is this a new momentum that will really get someplace, or is it just more lip service? It's hard to say, but I do feel that there's a stronger interest in it now. Now, for instance, the Biden administration expressed about 2 weeks ago a willingness to support two permanent seats for Africa. But the point becomes we're in an election season in the United States. You know, the Biden administration is leaving one way or the other. Will his successor be Kamala Harris, who might continue this policy, or might it be Donald Trump, who wasn't friendly to the United Nations during his 4 years in office, and he pulled the U.S. out of things like the Paris Climate Agreement and the World Health Organization. So it's hard to say whether the U.S. would still back Security Council reform and permanent seat for Africa in 2025. So it's just a wait and see game right now.
And lastly, Margaret, you think anything will change as far as the crisis in Sudan is concerned?
Well, unfortunately, right now we see it's very hot. Still, escalation and fighting starting on Thursday in the capital, Khartoum. El Fasher in North Darfur is still very much in peril. There was no breakthroughs, and none were expected, quite frankly. Here in New York, General Burhan from the Sudanese Armed Forces was here last week, and he addressed the assembly. But it's hard to say. He said he wouldn't sit at the table with the Rapid Support Forces leader until they withdraw their forces, pull them back. So right now, no movement on Sudan, unfortunately.
That was UN correspondent Margaret Bashir talking with me from New York. General Michael Langley, the commander of U.S. Africa Command, or AFRICOM, sat down for an exclusive interview with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. In this segment of their discussion, Carla asks General Langley about the growing security concerns in the Horn of Africa amid growing tensions in the region and an upcoming pullout of troops with the African Union transition mission in Somalia at the end of the year.
We have to take it as credible. So we're just watching that like closely as far as who is the overall leader. And if ISIS professes that, we got to take that seriously.
The Horn of Africa is in turmoil right now due to the differences between Somalia and Ethiopia. From a national security perspective, how does this affect the war against al-Shabaab?
There's limited operations with the Ethiopians at this time. Time will tell if they can settle their differences, and because when they do work together, they're very, very effective at clearing out al-Shabaab. The unknowns are who are going to be the troop contributing country to the awesome construct, and the transition from Atmos to awesome. And that starts at the end of the year. In the Atmos construct, one of the anchor and frontline countries was Ethiopia. So that's what has me concerned, because Ethiopia, especially in the southwest state, and their contributions to the liberation and stabilization has been valuable.
General Langley, do you think that U.S. forces may be needed during that transition from Atmos to AWSM, or even after that transition, to try to supplement the security as they're trying to bring forces out and pull forces in?
No, that's not my mission. That's not what we're there for. All of our initiatives and our approach on the African continent with our African partners will be Africa-led and U.S.-enabled. So our piece of enabling is not our boots on the ground. We're there to advise and assist and assist in the training, but the fight is theirs.
I want to follow up about something that senior defense officials told VOA in June. They had said that the Somali National Army's Central Somalia campaign had put al-Shabaab on the back foot. That was the term that they used for the past 2 years. But then al-Shabaab had in about 6 months reversed those gains this year. Is that what you see?
Well, they're still building the Somali National Army. So as they go on offensive operations, it is stress on the force. As they clear and liberate a region, you have to have a credible holding force there so stabilization activities and efforts can initiate and turn the populace and faith in the federal government of Somalia with the services they provide. So that's a very fragile period. And if they can't sustain that because they're moving to the next region or next district, it ebbs.
So that was what was happening.
Yes, that's what you're seeing. You're seeing ebbing and flowing.
They couldn't hold the territory that they had gained.
Right.
And that's where your training is coming in to try to get them ready and sped up to be able to hold that territory.
Exactly. It takes time. It's an investment to build an army.
So even with that assessment, with the struggles in the central Somalia region, even with Atmos moving out and a new force yet to be determined moving in, you have still said that you are, quote, cautiously optimistic that Somali forces will be successful against al-Shabaab.
Well, we are at an inflection point. This is unknown territory, how they're going to navigate this transition. Yes, we need a credible holding force. However, when I say I'm cautiously optimistic, I'm looking at the whole of government effort. Every time I go there, stabilization activities are increasing. Activities that USAID has put forth in their efforts of working with civil society organizations to hit those benchmarks of stability.
That was General Michael Langley, the head of U.S. AFRICOM. He was speaking with VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Cal Labab. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. In the American Midwest, a local fight over a Chinese electric vehicle battery factory reflects broader U.S. controversy over Chinese investments in the U.S. VOA's Calla Yu reports on how the issue of U.S.-China competition is playing out in a small city in Michigan during this year's U.S. presidential election.
Big Rapids, a small city of nearly 8,000 in Mecosta County, Michigan. Much of its public life takes place here at PetCurry's service station. A Chinese company called Goshen has deeply divided this part of the state.
The devil's at work in our community right now.
The company is planning to invest $2.4 billion to build a plant in the area to manufacture electric vehicle battery components, drawing mixed reactions from residents. Al Lawson lives in Big Rapids.
For the overall economy, it's going to be a boost.
Resident Donald Helder likes having Goshen here.
Because we send so much U.S. dollars to China, we need to figure out some way as to how to get some of that back here by way of investment in our American economy.
But others worry about Goshen's links to China. Bruce Borkovich owns a farm near the plant site.
I'm 100% no Goshen. I think there's serious environmental concerns, but for me, those are probably outshadowed by the security concerns.
FBI Director Christopher Wray warned about the blurry line between the Chinese government and its private sector, and the potential that Beijing could exploit U.S. vulnerabilities and undermine its national security. Goshen did not respond to VOA's request for comment. Goshen was founded in China, and its U.S. subsidiary is headquartered in California. Its board members hail from China, the U.S., and Germany. Vice President of North American Manufacturing Chuck Thielen said his company is being singled out.
Something made someone decide Goshen's a scapegoat when we have very similar business practices to many companies already here.
Chinese investment in the U.S. has been a talking point in this year's presidential election. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump and his running mate J.D. Vance are accusing Democrats of using taxpayer money to pay China to set up shop in the U.S. Here's Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump.
China is buying up our technology. They're buying up food supplies. They're buying up our farmland.
According to the New York Times, Goshen received $800 million in subsidies from Michigan's Strategic Fund and may be eligible for Inflation Reduction Act tax credits. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer and other Democrats contend that incentives to companies like Goshen help keep business in the state rather than overseas. In May, Whitmer said, "We cannot let Chinese companies be the only ones innovating around electric vehicles, because then they will eat our lunch the way we're seeing happen in Europe." Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris also addressed U.S.-China competition in her keynote speech to the Democratic National Convention.
"I will make sure that we lead the world into the future on space and artificial intelligence, that America, not China, wins the competition for the 21st century."
Some residents here say the U.S.-China competition is coloring the debate, including Al Lawson.
"Well, the resistance comes from the national issue that's made everything kind of anti-Chinese."
And the Goshen issue has put Big Rapids on the campaign map, with Vance stopping here in August. Calla Yu, VOA News, Big Rapids, Michigan.
When Americans go to the polls in November, their choice between the Democratic candidate Kamala Harris and the Republican candidate Donald Trump will have ramifications for the world. However, neither candidate has offered detailed foreign policy proposals. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi has more.
The next U.S. president will face several foreign policy challenges, especially with the Israeli-Hamas war in Gaza and the prospects of a wider conflict in the region. The U.S., France, and other allies on Wednesday called for an immediate 21-day ceasefire to allow for negotiations in the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah. More than 600 people have died in Lebanon in recent days after Israel ramped up its strikes against the militant group. U.S. officials say they hope to use a three-week pause in fighting on the Lebanon-Israeli border to restart stalled negotiations for a ceasefire and hostage release deal between Israel and Hamas. Even if this effort succeeded, the next president would face the challenge of what to do after the war is over. The Democratic candidate, Vice President Kamala Harris, has called for a permanent ceasefire between Israel and Hamas militants, an independent Palestinian state, and Middle East stability. John Alterman, director of the Middle East program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, or CSIS, says the so-called two-state solution should be reconsidered.
To have the U.S. president talk time and time again about the importance of a two-state solution at a time when you have something like 4 out of 5 saying that doesn't get us security at all. You have to begin to address that. In the two-state, I understand addressing that reality in Israeli public opinion, and that's true either of the Harris administration or Trump administration.
Alterman was speaking this week at a CSIS gathering in Washington. Former President Trump has said he previously thought the two-state solution could work, but now he isn't sure it's possible. However, he has not publicly presented an alternative. Another foreign policy challenge for the next president will be the rising influence of China and Russia on Africa. Both are rapidly increasing economic and cultural engagement with the African nations, and Russia is expanding its military support for several countries. At the CSIS event, some experts said increased U.S. diplomatic outreach on the continent in the past few years has not yet translated into enhanced ties, especially in the areas of trade, investment, and infrastructure. And they say the continent will likely remain a secondary concern in U.S. foreign policy. Cameron Hudson, a senior fellow at the Africa program at CSIS, says the state of U.S. politics helps push African countries closer to Russia and China.
This polarization in the United States has driven them to look actively for other partners. It is in now the sort of strategic document of the African Union where it has declared that the unipolar world that the United States led since the end of the Cold War has not served Africa's interests, and that going forward, there must be a multipolar world to better serve African interests. And so they are actively pursuing that.
Hudson said African countries are looking for actions, not just rhetoric.
Remember that in Biden's first year in office, he announced that he was in favor of the African continent getting one UN Security Council seat. In 3 years, there's been no movement on how to do that, on how to reform the Security Council. And now as he's leaving, he's saying, okay, we're going to up it to two. The response from Africa has been, where's the plan? Where's the actual roadmap or the blueprint for how we get from this promise to reality?
Regional experts, however, say it's unclear how much either Trump or Harris would change policy on Africa, given that neither has spoken much about the continent during their campaigns. Mohammed Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations Security Council today extended its authorization of the multinational policing mission in crime-ravaged Haiti. It did not call to transform it into a UN peacekeeping mission as the Port-au-Prince government had suggested. The resolution adopted unanimously extended the mission until October 2, 2025. The Kenyan-led policing mission aims to help the Haitian National Police to take back control of areas under gang control. Kenya has about 400 officers in place now. Jamaica and Belize also have contributed officers. Last week, Kenyan President William Ruto said the deployment would be completed by January, bringing the total force to 2,500. It's time now for a look at sports over the weekend, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria.
Ethiopia dominated Sunday's 50th edition of the Berlin Marathon with winners in both the men's and women's races. 24-year-old Melkesha Mengesha finished strongly and ran a personal best time of 2 hours, 3 minutes and 17 seconds to finish ahead of Kenya's Sibren Katut and Stephen Kiprop in the men's race. Mengesha collapsed after crossing the finish line and wiped away tears as he was overcome by emotion. The women's result was clear long before the men's race, as Tigist Kitema dropped her rivals before the halfway mark and finished in 2 hours 16 minutes 42 seconds, the third fastest time recorded in Berlin. Compatriots Mesterwood Fekir and Busena Mulate finished in 2 hours 18 minutes 48 seconds and 2 hours 19 minutes. Staying with athletics, Kenya running legend Jenneth Jepkosgei made a historic contribution to the Museum of World Athletics, donating the singlet she wore on the 28th of August 2007 when winning the 800 meters title at the World Championships in Osaka. It was the first ever world title won by a Kenyan woman in a middle distance event, paving the way for 8 more titles claimed by her successors in subsequent editions up to 2023. Jepkosgei, who is now head coach of the under-20 athlete refugee team, made a donation to the Museum of World Athletics during the World Athletics Under-20 Championship Lima 2024, presenting her singlet to World Athletics CEO Jean Rijon. And now to rugby, where South Africa claimed their second rugby championship title with a stunning 48-7 victory in Mbombela Nesprout, South Africa. The hosts avenged their defeat in Argentina with outstanding performances from Afilele Fasai and Peter Steve Detroit against an Argentinian side weakened by indiscipline and injuries. The South African Springboks, the reigning double world champions, have reaffirmed their dominance of international rugby with the title. The Springboks will now take a break until early November when they travel to the United Kingdom to play tests against Scotland, England and Wales. In cricket news, Nigeria has secured Africa's sole ticket to the International Cricket Council Under-19 Women's World Cup to be held in Malaysia in 2025. Nigeria was declared the winner of the Under-19 Africa qualifiers on Sunday after the final match against Zimbabwe was washed out due to heavy downpour in the second innings. The final game, played at the Gahanga International Stadium in Kigali, saw Nigeria win the toss and opt to bat, scoring 77 runs for the loss of 8 wickets in 20 overs. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
And the NBA just announced that Dikembe Mutombo, the Hall of Fame finger-wagging center who spent much of his post-basketball career as an ambassador for the sport, has died of brain cancer at the age of 58. Mutombo was a native of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. He played 18 NBA seasons for the Denver Nuggets, Atlanta Hawks, Philadelphia 76ers, New Jersey Nets, New York Knicks, and Houston Rockets before retiring after the 2008-2009 season. Then he worked extensively for charitable and humanitarian causes. He served as an ambassador for the sport, particularly in the development of the Basketball Africa League.
Hi, I'm Carol Van Dam. Join us for live coverage of the one and only U.S. Vice President's debate between Republican J.D. Vance and Democrat Tim Walz early Wednesday. The face-off, hosted on U.S. Network CBS News in New York, may not carry the same high stakes as the September debate between former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris, but it will be a fresh chance for both candidates to introduce themselves and support the top of the ticket. Tune in at 12:30 a.m. UTC, 30 minutes before the debate begins, and directly afterward for analysis.
Hello, I'm Yeheyes Wuhib. What challenges, if any, does the African diaspora face when trying to engage in the U.S. presidential election process? We will ask our panel of experts on VOA's African Diaspora Town Hall event Wednesday, October 16th at 16:30 UTC. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Helen Cordian, Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.